You're listening to Like Mother, Like Son on WJFF.
And that's my mother, Patricia Adams.
And that's my son, Ramsey Adams.
Okay. The show is Like Mother, Like Son?
Yes. That's right, with
really?
The question mark.
With a question mark.
Right. You know, it's a mother's son thing.
Welcome to Like Mother, Like Son. I'm Ramsey Adams, and this is my mother, Patricia Adams.
Good evening. Tonight on Like Mother, Like Son, we're talking with Irene O'Garden, who is an author, a poet, and a performer. Now, Irene, I know you're a good Midwestern girl. You came to New York from the Midwest, and initially I think you came to New York to perform. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Absolutely. I started as a performer. I was longing to get to New York because I'd sort of come out of a period in my life that was that I later wrote about in a book of mine called Fat Girl. I was an overweight child, and one of the ways that I adjusted to life was in high school I discovered the theater, and that was a very empowering thing for me to do, to learn to become a performer, to sort of be someone that I didn't feel that I was. I could pretend to be people, and so I couldn't wait to get to New York and do that all over the stage.
So do you do karaoke now?
I haven't done that in ages.
It's sort of the quintessential.
That's great.
Go be something you're not.
Yeah, that's great.
Well, as a fat girl, if I might just say that, and when you were a kid, was it not hard to get on stage where everybody was looking at you?
Yeah, I had a really transformative experience because I didn't think anyone would look at someone who was very overweight. But I found by kind of hamming it up on stage, I was able to bring an energy to performance that was sort of my pent-up energy from the whole rest of my emotional life. And it was something that seemed to delight people and something I took a great deal of delight in. Part of this book that I wrote about Fat Girl, which kind of chronicles my growing up as this young woman and being, you know, tortured by the little children who knew me and really absorbed with a great deal of self-hatred and loathing that was played out in behaviors with food. Sort of the process of writing that book helped me heal from that issue and also kind of made a performer out of me. So
you grew up in Minneapolis.
Yeah.
And you went to school there.
Uh-huh.
And came to New York when?
Boy, I came to New York in about 1977.
And you've been here ever since.
Yeah, uh-huh. Never looked back. Although I lived in the city with my husband for about 7 years, so we haven't lived in the city for that long. But then we moved upstate, and it's been great ever since.
So
it's great in the city, too.
Fat Girl's a book.
Yes, which I also did as a performance piece. I still do it, but there hasn't been, you know, I've been doing other projects, so I haven't been doing it as much as I used to, but it's sort of the story of that, how I kind of learned to love myself and come to peace with
I've watched Irene perform that, and Irene no longer has the problem of obesity, so she's, you know, one of the great success stories, and not because of a lot of diets, but because of a whole inner change that you went through. But she performs it very well, and I think expresses, as you said, that self-loathing as you were reaching for more cookies. I remember that scene, and a lot of us can identify with the pain that goes with that experience.
Mm-hmm.
But Irene is also, when I keep talking about your plays, you also wrote a play called Women on Fire, which is a series of monologues, and Irene is willing to read us from one of these monologues. How many monologues are in the play exactly? Eight?
In the published version, which was done by Sam French, the play was done at the Cherry Lane in New York City a couple of years ago with a wonderful actress called Judith Ivey, who played all 11 roles. The play can be done by, you know, five actresses doing three parts a piece or two actresses splitting them up. It was just done in Wiesbaden, Germany, with also a single actress. And it's basically...
And it won awards there, I
think. Actually, it did, I'm happy to say. best drama in Europe in the in the situation in which it was. But anyway, it's eleven monologues of various contemporary women. And I just sort of went off to a cabin and began to listen inside of me, because once I had kind of heard my own voice and expressed that, I thought, well, who else is inside? And the person I'm going to share a little bit with you today of is a character called Fern, and she opens the show. And not everything I do is weight related, but you will hear a little weight thing in here. not everything I do is Midwest either, but
right, Fern's from the Midwest.
Oh no, I'm not creative. I just like doing crafty things. My hands gotta keep busy. If I could bake in this waiting room, you betcha I would. But these are portable, and it goes quick. She's needle pointing. I tried quilting once. It was depressing. Took too long to finish. I'll have these little kittens done before Doc even sees my bunions. They're going to a little girl I know. Oh, geez, the kittens, not my bunions. And it's like baking. You're only going to make somebody happy. That is, unless they're your daughter. Then you're going to disappoint them no matter what you do. Oh, she lives in New York City. She's in publishing. Lord knows I can't bake for her. There's about 1 minute at Christmas where she'll eat something I bake her. Then all of a sudden it's New Year's. No butter, no flour, no sugar, no eggs. So now I bake for our funeral auxiliary. They like my cakes. You want something sweet, but not too sweet on a day like that. Oh, yeah, families sit splitting up. Parents die. No one comes to mourn them when they're gone. So we go, so they're not just lying there all by themselves, you know. At least I'll have the funeral auxiliary to mourn me, because I don't think my daughter will come. Oh, no, she's ashamed of me. Like kids when they're in high school, only she never outgrew it. It's not just the weight. I crocheted her up a little toilet tissue cover, cute as a bunny's nose, and she starts jumping on me about taste. I'm going to say, you're a fun one to talk about taste. You don't even eat. But I bite my tongue. That's why I like bacon. You don't get an argument. Your extracts and your spices get along fine. The pan don't get sick of the batter. The dough never says, oh, something came up today. I couldn't rise. I forgot to turn golden brown. It never lets you down.
Thank you, Irene. That's absolutely wonderful. And I've seen Irene perform this, and I've seen Judith Ivy at the Cherry Lane.
That's a monologue about bacon, right? And bacon and eggs.
This is someone who loves
bacon.
Bacon, yeah.
You're listening to Like Mother, Like Son on Radio Jeff. Our guest today is Irene O'Garden. And we have a featured musical guest today as well, also from Minneapolis, Rob Meany and the band Terramera. This is Running Down the Avenue. Again, that was Rob Meany and the band Terramera from Minneapolis. Now back to Ramsey and Patricia with author Irene O'Garden.
So tell me about getting, you know, you write a play or a series of monologues in this mm-hmm. case, which is makes up a play.
Mm-hmm.
And we all maybe have tried at one point or another to write a play. Mm-hmm. And most of them live buried on a hard drive on a computer somewhere.
Uh-huh.
How do you get it? How did you get it onto the stage?
Well, it's interesting. I'm essentially a poet. And if you look at my body of work, it's all meant to be heard. I love the sound of words. And I love the fact that you can bring people together and share words with them. There's that beautiful vibration that happens, not just in a theater, because I've also written books for children, and those are meant to be heard on a parent's lap, a parent reading to a child. I think it's a very deeply satisfying thing that we don't have enough of. And so it starts as a very inner process for me. It starts as a process of listening within, and then writing words down. And then what happened with this particular set of, because they really are poems. I don't tell people that because there's a lot of poetry fear in our country.
Yes.
Oh my gosh, white space, poetry, I won't understand it, when really I think it's such a beautiful form of communication. It is the one to which we turn in the most important times of our lives, whether it's loss or a wedding or whatever. We're always looking for those words. And
could I ask you how you define poetry as opposed to something else, or...
Oh boy!
Is it? Didn't mean to throw you on that.
No. For me, poetry is it first starts with a strong feeling,
right,
of some kind, and then that brings with it its own sense of rhythm, and so it's the feeling and the rhythm, and then the pleasure of words which convey the images and the feeling just in the way that they're assembled. And then also taking out anything extraneous.
Right.
So that's a really poor, long-winded response to the absolute directness and firmness.
Well, we're going to hear some of your poetry, and that'll define it. Oh. But I did interrupt you, and you're talking about Ramsey's question about getting your work actually produced.
Well, with this, I mean, there is no way, as everyone knows, there's really no procedure that you can follow in order to get your work out to the world. I believe what you do is you go to the place which deeply satisfies you. The reason Fat Girl got published was that I met with a group of people because I thought, we're never going to hear the great poets read aloud unless we sit and do it ourselves in a circle. And as a result of that, someone was in the circle who I passed out cards because I was doing a reading of Fat Girl, and I passed out cards to those people, and this person came and she heard that and she told her agent about me. And so that's kind of how that book happened. With this, I went right back to that inner world, and I went, well, I am a poet, even though the world in general doesn't seem to get that. And I wrote these poems, and then I was part of something called the Voices of the Valley in the Hudson Valley, a series of poetry performances that were done throughout. And I would get up and I would always read my regular poems. And people would like, oh, I really like your poems. But I would read these poems, these persona poems, I called them. And people were like, oh my gosh. Oh, well, there's a certain quality of liveliness that they have. And people love characters. I found that, you know, if I say something as myself, people find it interesting. But if I put someone else's name at the top, and say right. It's a character, they're much more interested, which I find quite amusing. So what happened was, I began, there are actually 22, 23 of these women on fire. And I gave them to, my husband's a playwright as well, and I gave them to my husband, and he loved them, and he knew an actress by the name of Judith Ivey with whom he had worked on Broadway before. And he said, let me give these to Judy and get her ideas. And I sort of thought, great, she was going to give me feedback. And she read them, and she went, oh my gosh, do you mind? I'm doing a master class at a university. Can I read some of these as part of that? And I went, can you? Well, of course. And so then she went back, and when she came back to me, she said, do you mind if I memorize some of these the next time? And I said, memorize, of course. So it was a little step-by-step process. She was on Nantucket, and she began to do them at the theater there, and we worked together, and then we found the Cherry Lane. And so it was a wonderful kind of very organic process of growth for that piece.
That's great. It's a great way to get past the gatekeeper of the stage.
Yeah. And it all goes back to what feels good to me.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
You know, I love writing for children. But what happened was I wrote these books, and I still felt like, you know, I have a book called Maybe My Baby that has sold 83,000 copies. And yet it's still, you keep knocking at the door going like, hello, excuse me. You know, and there's not quite the sense of working together as there used to be in the children's book world. So what happened was that stopped being fun for me. And that's always a really good place for me to gauge what should I do next. Because if this is not fun, I'm going to go off someplace, and even if it's not, you know, as celebrated as this world, I'm going to go back, and then, but it finds its way out. You know?
Now, have you found an audience on the internet for poetry? I mean, have you ever seen poetry.com?
Which is the most bizarre. Yeah.
It's almost like a scam, I think. I'm not quite exactly sure what they do, but
well, it's interesting.
They send you awards
all
the time.
You have to kind of be aware. It's sort of like the old vanity presses in a sense. One of the reasons my work is not widely available yet on the internet, although I do have some of my poems on my website, which is ireneogarden.com.
Would you spell it?
Yes, Ireneogarden.com. Though I have an apostrophe in my name, usually do not put it in there because, of course, apostrophes simply confuse computers. But anyway, so you can read some of the poems there. But those poems have been published. And the reason I don't do a lot of poetry publishing on the web is that, indeed, it is published then.
Right.
So you cannot share that with considered published, so many places will not look at that. However, I'm in the process right now of trying to develop sound files for my website because I really do love reading my poetry. And since my words are meant to be heard, I'm about to add that aspect to my website.
We're going to have you read a poem, but I want to put that off until you talk to us a little bit about the play you're working on right now.
Well, I can't tell you about my very newest project because we're still in negotiation for rights, which are available, and they like my proposal. But the play that I just finished is the play called Little Heart. And it is about an artist who was an internationally known silkscreen artist in the 1960s. Her name was Carita Kent. She died in 1986. And her story was fascinating to me for so many reasons because it has all the themes that I'm very interested in. It has, it's about art. And I love art and the process of art, and I think art is one of the great healing forces in our lives. And so I wanted to share that with people. But it also has a struggle in it because she was a very spiritual person. She, for many, many years, was an Immaculate Heart nun, lived in Hollywood, and became this nun who traveled around, very unusual in her time period, and at the same time was struggling with fame because the major magazines, she was published in all the major magazines. She was an advisor to President Kennedy and President Johnson, kind of hobnobbed with them. So the conflicts between being an artist, being a spiritual being, and being someone in the crucible of fame, at the same time the church was changing in a remarkable way, and having to battle some very conservative forces in the church. At the same time, the Vietnam War was going on, and her art became very politically charged. And I was quite interested in writing this play when I started 4 years ago, because that was the time that the Iraq War was beginning, and I felt like we needed some influx of that energy back into the world. And the play has had a reading in New York, a reading at Harvard, and it just had a reading in Los Angeles at the American Film Institute. And after each of those readings, I did some work, and after this last one, I feel it's really, really ready to go out there.
I'm just going to insert one thing for our listeners who have not heard of Carita, Sister Carita. But almost everybody has seen that little postage stamp that says love across it. Because so many people,
yes,
when they get married, they send their wedding invitations, they get that stamp. I mean, you can,
yes,
still buy it,
yeah,
right?
I mean,
I think it's... So she was a graphic designer and, I mean, a silkscreen artist. But people will recognize that stamp if you, yeah, don't know right off, you don't recognize the name.
Yes, and she also created the single largest copyrighted artwork in the world, which is outside of Boston. There are two large gas tanks, one of which has a great rainbow painted over it, and that was her.
So this is a play about her creative life?
Yeah, it spans 20 years. It's also, for me, it's a story of what happened to us in the 60s, what happened to our culture. It went from this very repressed, thing that was going on in the 50s to this very free, and it, that also parallels her life, which was very repressed at the beginning and became very free.
How do you write? Are you a yellow pad and pencil person?
No, actually, although I do when I'm jump starting the process, I'll often write and write on with a pen on a. I have these little black notebooks that I write in. But then what happens is I'll take over at the computer. And it's a different kind of writing. When I'm writing longhand, it's a different process. So, you know, a poem may start that way. Or that's always the best way for me to open. But then I eventually move over. And I will always be grateful that the computer has come in because it's a very forgiving thing. It made me... I used to hate my writing because I would see all the mistakes on the page and I would white out and I would cross off. And it was just visually so unpleasant for me. But now that you can just take out blocks of text or move them around. Right. It's a great gift.
Delete.
Yeah. Oh, delete. But recover is also as important. Go back. Oh, what did I do? Yeah.
Once again, you're listening to Radio Jeff. This is Like Mother, Like Son. And our featured musical guest today is Rob Meaney and the band Terramera from Minneapolis. Now we're going to hear Rise and Fall. And now, the conclusion of Like Mother, Like Son with author Irene O'Garden.
So how long does it take for your plays to go from conception to production?
It's interesting. My larger pieces seem to take about 5 years, although this next piece isn't going to take that long. But I can't say anything more. You can just keep checking my website to find out.
And when you write... For the stage, do you write with characters in mind? I mean, do you picture, Carita?
Carita. It varies because with Women on Fire, was a completely internal thing. It wasn't based on interviews. It wasn't based on any.
Could you just give three of the women just to give an example of the variety?
Yeah, there is, for example, Clover, who is this very sophisticated New York ad executive, and she's just the cream of the crop in New York. But she realizes that she can't do this anymore, and so her monologue is about why can't she do advertising anymore. And then there is just a character I just adore by the name of Kalisha, and she is an African-American construction worker who talks about building and destroying and having been through a really wrenching experience with her husband. So and then there's also the Evening Ends with Jordy, who's an Appalachian singing, dancing woman, and she believes that dancing is the hymnal. She and dancing and moving your body can change your life. So and those were all, they just kind of, I just heard them. Whereas with Little Heart, completely different process. I actually interviewed many people who knew her. It was a tremendous amount of research that I did for that. A lot of primary research. So interviews with people who knew her. I read, she has 6 feet of shelf space at Radcliffe where her papers are housed. So I read all of that. I looked at over 790 pieces of her artwork repeatedly, and there are slides of her artwork that are to be done during the show. So that was a very different process. And there's no way There's nothing I actually follow repeatedly, except mm-hmm. I do have that book that I write in, and I do have the computer. And
most of the work so far that you've talked about, you've done independent. You're not collaborating mm-hmm. with. Do you collaborate right. with other artists in any of your work, or are you more of a go-it-alone artiste?
It hasn't surfaced since I was in high school. I had a great collaboration with a friend of mine, actually doing a radio show over our PA system. So that was a great deal of fun. I'm certainly open to collaboration, but I guess my life path tends to take me... Solitude is very important to my process. So when I do get that time to really think creatively, I tend to be taking it by myself.
And one thing that's been quite consistent all along with the variety of your work is your poetry, however. And would yes. you read us one of your poems?
Well, perhaps?
Sure. Do you know which one... I have...
But you never collaborated with your husband, who's a playwright also.
I know.
How does that work?
Well, because he has a very solitary, he has very specific solitary things that he likes to do.
Uh-huh.
And but we are each other's first readers.
Okay.
His name is John Pielmeyer, and he wrote, he's most known for his play Agnes of God.
Mm-hmm.
He's a wonderful writer with an incredible strong sense of story, which is something I, as a poet, had to really work at. You know, I can tell a story, and a lot of my poems are narrative poems, but to actually structure a play or a dramatic event is a great challenge, and he's been very helpful.
And speaking of poems, would you
yes.
read one of your poems for us to close out the program, Irene?
Absolutely.
I did this.
Oh, well, speaking of my husband, I'll read this one. To my husband... Away on business. I sit in my red chair under the green lamp in the yellow room surrounded by our mingled lives. Together we arranged the boxed and bottled things, at least 100 dishes, nearly 20 feet of music, our books intershuffled like aces and hearts. Your gloves and mine nestle in each other's palms. You hear this squeaky drawer, the shower sound, responding birds, our dog's impatient voice. You, too, saw the sky through the rafters last fall when the house was re-roofed. Each June, we are together drenched in honeysuckle. This red chair shares your warmth, and now your hands and voice heartbeat the yellow room. Beloved, how good of you to come, to prove by this green light, no time nor space, just love assuming shapes.
Thank you so much, Irene O'Garden, for joining us on Like Mother Like Son.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much.
Good night.
Visit us online at www.likemotherlikeson.org and let us know what you think of the show.
Good night.